If the crew should zoom in on Washington while taking pictures, they would maybe see the Air and Space Museum, their admirers there, or other parts of the Smithsonian Institution, which means they would be seeing the setting of a movie, the sequel to Night at the Museum, which opens tomorrow. NPR's Elizabeth Blair has reported on the challenges facing the Smithsonian, so we asked her to zoom in on the film.
I've been to a lot of Smithsonian press conferences about things like governance and fundraising. The press conference for Night at the Museum 2 was thankfully nothing like that. It was in the 19th century Smithsonian castle, where an odd jumble of objects are on display, a stuffed snow leopard, some old-fashioned bicycles, an electric guitar.
It's nice to be in a room that looks like Michael Jackson's garage sale.
Robin Williams sat in a row with Ben Stiller, Ricky Gervais, Hank Azaria, Owen Wilson, and Amy Adams in front of dozens of reporters from around the world.
I have a question for Amy. Your career seems to be going very strong right now. How do you view your position?
Right now.
Right now.
Ricky Gervais and Robin Williams couldn't resist.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, right now. Good luck, Amy.
What are you doing with your money? Investing, yeah?
Of course, Amy Adams is doing great right now.
I'm sorry, was there a question at the end of...
Adams has two movies out this summer. She plays Amelia Earhart, who comes back to life in this film, and Julie in Julie and Julia with Meryl Streep. Night at the Museum is mostly set in the Smithsonian's Air and Space. And just like the first one, the living exhibits cause Ben Stiller's character all kinds of grief.
I want to go, no go for launch.
I say no go. Let's not go.
Go! Go!
The Smithsonian Institution has 19 museums the filmmakers could choose from. There's Air and Space, Natural History, American Art. It has thousands of cultural artifacts, like the hat Lincoln wore the night of his assassination, a Wright Brothers airplane, Archie Bunker's chair, and Dorothy's ruby slippers.
Why, these aren't real rubies at all. Ruby slippers, indeed. But... whoever you were, Archie Bunker, you had one comfortable throne.
Was this an easy thing to greenlight within the bureaucracy of the Smithsonian?
No.
General Jack Daly is the director of Air and Space.
There was some level of resistance initially. In fact, Claire Brown, our director of communications, was probably instrumental in selling this throughout the institution.
Now, Claire Brown doesn't really look like the type to be selling a Hollywood movie. She's a proper, reserved woman in her late 50s.
If the name Smithsonian was on the movie, you know, we had to be very careful about, you know, was it going to reach the right audience reputationally? Was it going to be mission related?
The mission of the Smithsonian is the increase and diffusion of knowledge. The movie is a wildly exaggerated action fantasy comedy. Even Rodin's Thinker, which isn't even at the Smithsonian, comes to life.
It's not happening with him.
But here's the thing. The Smithsonian is a taxpayer-funded institution that has been running a deficit for years. By having its name in the title of a major Hollywood movie, the Smithsonian is getting exposure it could never afford on its own. On billboards, commercials, Milk Duds, Happy Meals, Kraft Macaroni and Cheese.
I think with Kraft Macaroni and Cheese, it's 41 million packages, and kids eat a lot of macaroni and cheese.
Claire Brown and one of her colleagues got to approve the script, and they in turn gave the filmmakers a lot of leeway to put whatever and whoever they wanted in the movie version of the museum.
The range of exhibits at the Smithsonian gave us license to imagine such things.
Sean Levy directed both Night at the Museum movies. He says they're about the big what if.
That's a big part of the job of filmmaking, is you indulge your fantasies. You indulge your inner what-ifs.
And folks at the Smithsonian are tickled by it. Air and Space curator Bob Vanderlinden loosely consulted on the movie.
Some of the things they're having the airplanes do are a bit of a stretch. They have the Wright Flyer flying down the hall through a door and outside with a passenger on board. The real Wright Flyer could barely get out of its own way. Totally preposterous, but great.
here's Bob Vanderlinden, a serious curator who works with historic facts all day, clearly charmed by the whole experience. Turns out during filming, director Sean Levy had a tougher time dealing with the fictional properties.
There's a scene where Darth Vader and Oscar the Grouch approach Hank Azaria's evil pharaoh.
Is that you breathing? Because I can't hear myself think.
Sounds like Darth Vader was a bit of a diva.
There's a guy who wears the suit, and he showed up on the set, but there's also Lord Vader's handler. And this is a representative from Lucasfilm, who is a lovely woman who stood there next to Darth Vader all day. And occasionally, she would say, Vader wouldn't do that. And I was like, really? Vader can't, like, shake his head in frustration? No, it's Darth Vader. He wouldn't do that. And there are these unspoken, like, codes of behavior for Lord Vader that this woman was there policing.
Sean Levy says a third night at the museum is not out of the question. At the press conference at the Smithsonian, someone asked where it might be set. Ben Stiller and Robin Williams couldn't resist.
Oh, the Louvre. You could go to the Louvre and have they'll all go crazy, huh?
Yeah. Crazy. It's sort of been already Da Vinci coded or something.
You're right.
After the first movie came out, attendance at New York's American Museum of Natural History jumped about 20%. Folks at the Smithsonian's already crowded air and space say they're ready for the onslaught. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.